Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 88. Food. It's a crime. So many people go hungry. Ago, I learned that the Irish potato famine was not just some accident in nature, but actually has to do with geopolitical, commercial shenanigans. Lots of food was being exported at the time that people were starving. This kind of thing is going on still today. Africa is a big example. Some of the news about food seems kind of crazy today in the world. The Washington Times reported recently, Agriculture Department puts in request to buy body armor. Think about what kind of mood you might get in when you're really, really hungry, but you have access to food. Then you can try to magnify that to relate to people who are close to starving or can barely get food. When I see nature, go to a farm, there's a lot of abundance. That's the true abundance. Not so much the new agey, how can I be abundant and do all that stuff, but the real abundance we learn from nature. And the title of the show comes from a haiku that I wrote recently after going to a farm to get some organic plants for the garden. So many plants at the farm, it's a crime. So many people go hungry. This is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening. This is the first show in a while. I had some computer updating to do. The website is in the process of being fully updated, so things look a little different, yet similar. Wanted to get back into it, so I actually started writing an essay with a bunch of notes about food as the topic, but sometimes essays take a while to gel, so just was in the mood to kind of riff on the notes and see where it goes, talk about food. It's a big topic nowadays. I remember like maybe 5-10 years ago, all of a sudden starting to see articles on food online almost every day and sending them to a foodie friend who was interviewed in the earlier show, Sylvia Carter. And now it's, you know, you can follow food stories and day to day, particularly the GMO labeling is one of the biggest mainstream stories. Vermont voted for the mandatory labeling, and as soon as that happened, the corporations and the GMA, I think that's Grocery Manufacturers Association, they came out very much against that for some kind of countersuit or something. Anyway, that's an ongoing topic. There has to be, I think, 4 or 5 states in the East, Northeast, to make it, to turn it into effect. And so far, Vermont and maybe Connecticut have done that. So there's work to do. Hearing the thing about the GMOs that got me thinking was, like, here's this basic reality of, you know, calling the proverbial spade a spade, calling something what it is, and yet these companies, these big ass corporations, are determined not to call it what it is, which, you know, to my sense of logic, proves they're hiding something. But anywho, it brought up that, you know, the idea of just to label reality is a challenge. And, you know, the certain phrases that are famous, like Gertrude Stein's, a rose is a rose is a rose, that phrase is now suspect. And the current Zen-ish cliche, it is what it is now suspect, because it may not be what it is, and it may not be a rose. So, you know, we really have to kind of look deeper nowadays to see what's what. I've been a label reader since, gosh, my teens. I mostly read labels for jokes, for stand-up comedy, and then I got into reading labels, you know, to see what's in food, and I tend to avoid buying stuff that I cannot pronounce the items on the label. You know, sometimes it's just, you can find out what's in there, and maybe it's okay, but generally it's some kind of something I want to avoid. I was also thinking about food, the word food. It's kind of an inert word. So how about calling it food energy? Because that's really, you know, really what it is. We get energy from it. It takes energy to make it. The earth, the winds, the waters, the sun, the human care, the work to produce it, to harvest it. And, you know, we become weak without the food. So it gives us food energy, and the Mother Earth is literally giving us this energy. What do we do with this energy? Hopefully some of us, more of us will connect those dots and say, Mother Earth gave me this energy. Now maybe I'm going to give back at least something to her. You know, I can do my laundry, I can do my dishes, I can go do this and go do that, but some of that energy goes back to the mother. That's the way I started looking at it recently, more specifically, when I realized where the food energy is coming from. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 25, that includes food, among other things. Everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and of his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his control. You know, there's the basics: food, clothing, shelter, care. So, yet, with something so simple as that, we have whatever those statistics say here every so often. You know, 1 billion or 2 billion people with the planet live on like $2 a day or $1 a day. You know, starvation is an issue. Africa is, that's a big under the radar now with AFRICOM and CENTRICOM, maybe it's called it. These big corporations going in and doing land grabs, and instead of that helping to feed the starving Africans, much of it is being exported. So, you know, again, I'm just sort of riffing here. I'm not saying I know all these details, but, you know, you can look into these stories and see that there is accuracy. You know, the land grabs, the control of the land in Africa is a big deal. And trying to get the GMOs in there is a huge market. And, you know, some of what they say is that's to feed, oh, look, we can feed all these people. Well, there was an article recently about something in the title Hollow Food. How, you know, a lot of the foods that get eaten are, you know, may not be nutritious and not carry what we need. So, you know, filling up, I think of the cheese doodle, you know, that cheesy puff of air. It's, you know, you could eat 3 bags and maybe you get full, but what have you eaten? I don't know. I haven't checked the label recently. And no offense, I did see a friend eating cheese doodles the other day and I did not comment. What else there is? A couple of movies. There's a wonderful movie, Urban Roots. That's about Detroit, the urban farming going on there, and what looks like a war zone that Detroit had become a bunch of years ago. And the local people started doing farming and then not only feeding themselves, but sometimes distributing that to local, you know, local supermarkets. Community gardens is, there's some of that going on with Long Island, and I'm sure everywhere in Manhattan, in big cities, it's a big thing. I've heard of a local possibilities of doing, you know, rooftop gardening. That's even started. I think Whole Foods in Brooklyn started a rooftop garden, you know, to be able to sell their own produce and do it in the wintertime. That's awesome. It really cuts down on the travel, which ties into the fossil fuels and plus the expenses and plus the freshness. Another movie recently seen, The Garden, came out a few years ago about the East LA urban gardening. And again, these like indigenous people in the city just trying to feed themselves and running into all kinds of bureaucratic nonsense, to the point of the police state cracking down on them. And I think the combination of these things got me thinking about, you know, food, just this basic simplicity of food and how complex it has become, not only just to feed people, but to know that there is actually nutrients in the food. And also the business level, I think that's something that either the movie maybe Food Incorporated highlighted. Eric Schlosser's I sound like he's drunk. Eric Schlosser's book Fast Food Nation touched on the assembly line, the industrial age. That at a certain point, the food production turned into an assembly line. The horror side of that is showing these little like chickens, these baby chicks going down the assembly line and they do something to their beaks, and I mean it's just oof, it's hard to watch. But that's sort of the food energy got disconnected from the not only from the land, but from the humanitarian, from the all my relations angle. So it's part of that the disconnect. The movie story about Temple Grandin, her doing what she could to help the humane slaughtering for the beef. So there's all kinds of ways we can be, you know, more humane and respect relations. And, you know, even we think of two-leggeds, four-leggeds, the fish, the flyers, but also the plants, you know, the medicine plants. Those are a major part of the native culture, indigenous cultures. Again, the big corporations can go into the Amazon or certain parts of forests and take out little bits of herbs and then market them in a big way, but they've diluted the original intensity that came with what the medicine and the men and the locals know. So there's a wealth of knowledge with herbs. And, I remember the first time I had like a local grown lettuce. I couldn't believe the taste. It was almost like four or five mouthfuls, and I was satisfied compared to, you know, sometimes having a bowl of salad and feeling like I just ate, you know, some like air made out of something. And the corporate monoculture, I've heard that phrase from Lawrence Ferlinghetti and probably elsewhere now. It's become sort of a standard phrase, the corporate monoculture. That not only is it in the malls and going through, you know, in almost any area. I haven't traveled in a while, but going to different cities and different countries in the world, even countries, and seeing the same stores and the same gas stations and the same chain stores, it's like you can travel and go nowhere, which is sort of this sort of, it sounds like an idea for a novel or a sci-fi kind of thing. But plus that the monoculture depletes the soil when it's the quick fix mentality. Grow as much as you can on one thing, and it avoids the nutrients of the soil, which is again what the natives know stuff about. The three sisters, corn, beans, and squash, is a reality and a metaphor for the plants helping each other out, and not only helping each other out, but each adding nutrients into the earth. But this monoculture is sort of like it's Nazification, where everything's the same. You know, the people want their lawns cut, the grass to be every blade the same height, and it's like whew, it's just amazing. What else? A recent news story that was touching in on the food, a positive sign, but still sort of shaking the head on it. This is how the article starts. It was at commondreams.org. In a decision welcomed as a major crack in Guantanamo's years-long effort to oppress prisoners, a federal judge on Friday ordered the United States to halt the force feeding and forcible cell extractions of a prisoner at the notorious offshore prison. So there we have the U.S. force feeding prisoners, but luckily some judge has the sense to stop that. Perhaps the opposite of forced feeding is fasting, in the sense of as a form of political activism. People like Gandhi, Dick Gregory, various famous people over the ages have decided to fast as a statement. And I haven't done much fasting, but once in a while I'd like to do just a fast during the day and then have dinner. And even that is, I've learned a lot over the years. It's just the times when I go for food or just sort of automatically go for food and realize, well, okay, I have that moment, but I can choose to put my attention elsewhere, and then I'm not that, then I don't need the food for that certain as much as I thought I did. And there's a point sort of early evening where it sort of becomes, can see how longer fasting would lead to visioning and sort of trippy kind of quality, because one, there's sort of a little bit of a lightheadedness and having to slow down a little, but it does enhance the meditative visionary states. So that's a positive side to the fasting. And then even today we have not only people not being fed, but then I don't know, I haven't done a study on this, but perhaps it's in urban or in somewhat well-to-do cultures like the U.S. Empire, where we have so many eating disorders is a major deal. Yeah, we have lots of food, but people are dealing with such psychological issues, psychological stress, wherever that comes from, that we have various eating disorders. So again, I've just suddenly been fascinated by the impact of food and how many offshoots and topics there are. I remember in my teens, I would sort of get through about three quarters of the meal at dinner a lot of times, or other meals, and then I would kind of lose my appetite. It took me, I don't know how many years later, to realize that it was like a psychological insight breakthrough when I realized in those teen years that what would happen after dinner would be that I would go into my room alone. And at that time in my life, that was such an anxiety, sort of existential anxiety producing time that I connected the that sense of having, that I connected that part of me at the time was unconscious, was realize I was anticipating what would happen, and that was, there was a loss of appetite due to the emotional, psychological state going on. So as soon as I realized that, it was like suddenly in my app, I had a better appetite, and I could, plan, I could think ahead a little bit more about, oh, what am I going to do after the meal, and it stopped becoming an anxiety thing. So hopefully that might be helpful to people dealing with stuff. Don't mean to diminish what somebody might be dealing with in a pop psychology way, but oftentimes the root of the issue is connected with something perhaps very simple or specific, even though the ramifications are deep. So if you can figure that out, you can solve a lot of your stuff. And that reminded of another, I think it's an hour documentary called Dumpster Diving. Before I watched this documentary, I thought I would never, ever, ever go into a dumpster for food. And after the documentary, the next day I went down to Trader Joe's and actually asked them if they had a dumpster. Because in the movie they show how sometimes often if one pepper out of four in a plastic tray and case was, if one out of the four peppers, was bruised or something, they would throw out all four. So that was like, wow, that changed my perception of what dumpster diving could be, that, there could be a couple of clean peppers in there, so why not give it a go? But I think they had their, I don't even know if it was available or it was behind a locked fence. Luckily at least some of the food from those places gets taken to people that need it, but it's a huge issue. The amount of food waste is astounding in the U.S. It's a huge percentage, and I really wish there were more. There's like a whole transport system. Some people do it, of the transporting, taking this food to shelters and starving people, the leftover, the day old food that's beyond the date, that's still good, but because of these potential lawsuits of the post dated food that might cause a problem, understandable on one level, but the amount of food waste is just ridiculous. I mean, I think if all the food that's wasted in the U.S. was like shipped to Africa and Asia, it would solve a huge amount of food issues. And again, on the local front, sometimes local, some farm may not be officially organic, but if you know the farmers, I mean, that could be as good as as good as organic if the farmers are taking care of it in a caring, loving way. They don't need the official certificate to grow something good. And without pesticides or whatever. That phrase, eat like a bird, people think that's not eating a lot, but actually, if you watch birds, they'll eat like all day. I mean, they'll snack, they'll eat little bits. So sometimes that's my mode, to eat little snacks and stuff sort of constantly rather than have specific meals. But I'm just saying these things is kind of like ideas for maybe people who have issues with food and try to eat. I think sometimes the official meal is sort of this Americanized, I don't know where it comes from, but sometimes it's sort of a forced feeling of that you have to have a meal. As one of my favorite Zen sayings is, when hungry eat, when tired sleep. Another interesting thing is the community in, I think it's Scotland, Findhorn. When they started back in the 70s or 80s, there's a book, I think it's called The Secret of Findhorn. And one of the women, Eileen Caddy, C-A-D-D-Y, it was a group of three people, and one woman started meditating. And in the meditation, she received messages from the devas, which are like angelic beings that every living thing has. The tomatoes started telling her, a little more water, or move us to the right a little bit, or a little less sunshine. And these people following the guidance, I mean, it sounds crazy, but the proof is in the pudding. They grew these tremendous, large-sized vegetables in a sort of parking lot quality soil. And now it's a worldwide community teaching people how to, be ecological stewards and do conscious farming, and also connect with the metaphysical worlds. So there's just so many ways to go with this stuff. Got the first few lines of the essay that may turn into or may not turn into an essay. From vegan to happy meal, stuffed to starved, hungry Africans to greedy agro businesses eating up acres of the motherland for export, food is a big topic. So that's one of those books on the shelves. I've only read a few pages of Raj Patel. It's a big seller, Stuffed to Starve. There's a certain portion of the population and the world population that is overweight, obesity issues, while then there's a huge portion of the population starved. So this imbalance thing going on, and so it's an integral, obviously it's an integral part of our daily lives, to get up. Some people have breakfast right away, some don't. Much of the day, in a way, revolves around meals and food. There's a social aspect. There's a sort of hermitage temple aspect of quiet meals. There's the social aspect of New York City and big city restaurants. There's all different ways to eat, to digest, to snack, to enjoy. I mean, the one thing I always, so much here in food circles, and sometimes even at wonderful natural food stores, it's always about, what is good for you, and this is good for you. But I would like to hear more people talk about, it tastes so good, or they enjoy eating it. Just to enjoy something goes a long way, and to really not enjoy eating something that's supposedly good for you, well, maybe that's what you need to do, but I don't know, there's a balance there too. It takes a lot to find out what to eat, and different people have different tolerances, whether it's a lactose intolerant. At the organic farm I went to, met this young girl behind the counter, and They make their own donuts there, which are like the best donuts I have ever had. And I told her how good they were, and she said she couldn't eat them because she has a wheat allergy. So, boy, I kind of felt bad for her because I love bread and wheat bagels. But so it's everybody's got their thing, and I think fondly of Julia Childs throwing in lots of butter and lots of booze into her food. And, you know, she lived a good, long, happy, healthy life. Then to sort of wrap it up, you know, with all the obvious, there's fast food, there are slow food movements. Not sure exactly what it means. I think maybe it's the, you know, just taking time to really slow down, enjoy a meal. You know, a meal can be a real communion, communion and sense of companion. The word companion comes from pan, bread, to who you share bread with or your companions. So the meal can be a time for real gathering. Sometimes people get lonely eating alone. It can be. Sometimes it can be meditative and nice. Sometimes eating with a large group of people can be too much. So, you know, whatever the answers are for you, hope you enjoy your food and your meal. And I hope you, more than anything, you have access to food and hopefully to food that you like and that food that is truly nourishing, because I think that's the becoming one of the big issues, not only making food accessible to people, but being nourished by it. So, bon appétit! And we'll go out with this little song from the musical Oliver, Food, Glorious Food.